From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I've never had a rock garden, I confess, but a new book about a modern and extreme form of the art caught my attention recently. It's called The Crevice Garden, How to Make the Perfect Home for Plants from Rocky Places, and its authors are here today to talk about why you might want to make room for one, and the plants it can support. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbook, Small Gift Books Illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now. Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Colorado-based Kenton Seth and Paul Spriggs from British Columbia are garden designers with a particular specialty in rock gardens. They're also co-authors of the new book, The Crevice Garden. When they appeared this spring on the popular Garden Masterclass webinar series, British host Noel Kingsbury said this in the way of introducing them. Rock gardening will no longer elicit a yawn because this is the future. I'm glad they're here today to give us a peek into this brave new world. So hi, Kenton and Paul, how are you?
Hi, Margaret.
Doing good. I'm well.
Good. Thanks for getting up early in the morning because I know you're hours earlier than we are. And I should say, with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com, we'll have a book giveaway of the book so people can go look for that. So to start, and I don't know who wants to answer which question, so you can alternate or whatever. What's the elevator pitch of what a crevice garden is, like, say, compared to a more conventional rock garden? What's a crevice garden?
Well, Kenton, you want to take that one?
Yeah. I mean, the true elevator speech to sort of the layperson who's not a gardener, I like to say it's like a bonsai mountain to grow plants from rocky places, you know, usually little rock plants. Sentence, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Miniaturized mountain ranges in people's backyards, I think, is an easy way to describe it. I think, or at least that's how I would see it if I came from the total outside.
And then, of course, it's also an improved style in terms of its ability to grow these difficult to grow plants. As far as my elevator pitch would go for someone getting into rock gardening, they might find that a garden constructed strictly out of crevices is the best way to succeed in having that type of a plant collection.
Okay. So when you say just crevices, so I'm taking that there's more rock than in your average rock garden, and the planting spaces are tighter in a crevice garden, as in they are crevices only.
Exactly. I mean, a traditional rock garden is, for all intents and purposes, a mound of soil just covered up with rocks and gravel, and it certainly serves the purpose for lots of plants. But a crevice garden, the rocks are all buried very deeply to create that deep crevice condition that a lot of these plants from rocky places really prefer.
You had an allusion in the Time story, and when we had done the interview for that, you guys talked about sort of sedimentary rock, or, you know, rock sort of stratified, like and the image of like a dish drainer with plates in it, you know. Do you know what I mean? This, you're talking about the buried. Yeah. So tell me about that.
That's a good way to describe the sort of I guess you'd say mainstream or traditional or the nascent form of crevice gardening, where you know, linear slab-like stones were stood on end, and that that idea was inspired from natural places that look like that. But crevice gardens have gone beyond that too. You know, they're not just vertical stones anymore. There's horizontal and diagonal and round stones and blocky stones. But, most classic crevice gardens are recognizable with that sort of traditional style.
Okay. And so are these gardens, and a lot of people ask this in the comments on the Time story, are these for only for places like Colorado or, you know, like mountainous, rocky, harsh, like... Where are these for anywhere?
Ironically, they were developed in more mild places to grow plants from the harsh places. So they started in, nicer climates, really, to be honest. I mean, they were used in Europe in lowland parts of Europe in the cities there to grow plants from the mountains. It just turns out that physics is the same everywhere. And what makes a crevice work there makes it work where I'm at in the real dry, arid West as well. So they're quite universal.
So Paul, where in a landscape can we fit one? Like a home landscape, can we fit one? I mean, I know they can be, and many botanical gardens have them and are using them for various purposes, including preservation, conservation of imperiled species and so forth. But where in a home landscape can I put a crevice garden? How much room do I have to have and so forth?
Well, I mean, you can have as big or as small as you want. And like any garden feature, it has to fit into your overall landscape so that it doesn't stand out like a sore thumb. Obviously, if you're just a plant collector and you don't care about how your garden really looks, well, then that's not as much of an issue. But for me, it needs to fit into the garden, and the crevice garden can fit into all types of places. It can, if it's a small garden, it can be tucked up near a garage door or a front entranceway to the house, along the side of a pathway or a driveway, or it could be its own freestanding feature out in the middle of a large expansive lawn or in a large gravel meadow. There's really all kinds of places it can go, as long as it doesn't feel kind of squished in there, and as long as it isn't kind of up against a lot of trees. It really wants to kind of stand on its own, so to speak. Okay. A lot of these gardens like the brightest, fullest type of conditions you can get. So it really fits in all kinds of places as a focal point and a great way to grow plants.
And you guys kind of alluded to this a little bit, but so the rocks, whichever shape, are buried partly in the ground, but they're not buried in a flat canvas of soil. This is like a mounded, like a berm, this is not something that's flat to the ground, right?
Definitely not.
Not usually. You could. But then it'd be a patio.
Exactly.
How to build a patio with Kenton and Paul.
We're trying to build dramatic, natural looking, for the most part, features. And the mountains are our inspiration for that. And so essentially, I think of it as like a miniature mountain. I try to build something that looks like it might be hard to climb.
Okay.
And for folks in wet climates, building it up like that increases the drainage. The surface drainage will dry out the garden for those plants, and is really helpful.
So, and it also gives the depth that those plants need. A lot of them are taprooted quite deeply. So the crevice garden will give them that depth that they need.
So they get a deep root run in these tight spaces.
That's right.
And in there is not our conventional soil that we've all been taught as gardeners to try to create, highly organic, humus, whatever. These are plants from lean, mean spots, yes, that we're going to be growing. And we'll talk more about which plants in a minute, but.
Yeah, they like junk. some of them are growing in pure gravel in the mountains. Paul and I, when we did research for the book and traveled around and met people, most places people use pure sand, builder's sand, as the growing media.
Okay.
But then as in places that get a little drier in climate, like me or even Central Europe, I started using more like rock dusts, gravel fines, if you want to call it that. And some of them would use tiny, tiny bits of compost if they're growing certain plants, but not usually. It was usually minerals and it was usually rock dust.
Mm-hmm. So not an organic soil, not a lot of compost and humus and all that kind of.
Compost is an exception when it shows up in crevice gardens.
Okay.
Yeah. All that nutrients will cause the plants to grow out of character, if not outright kill them.
Which is why some of the plants that are grown in crevice gardens, we may have killed them in a year or two or three or even more quickly in our conventional garden beds, right? I mean, they're these alpine plants, especially, I mean, they're not going to tolerate our garden beds, our traditional garden beds.
That's right. I mean, well, killing plants is part of gardening in my experience.
It's never happened to me.
No, of course not.
No.
every time you kill a plant, you learn, right?
Yeah.
And so
the only way to know the limits.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So what are some, just so that we could sort of visualize if I were getting started, what would be some of the things that I might put in my initial crevice garden, if I made this sort of berm like this outcrop kind of a garden with these partly buried stones and a fast draining medium, what would be some of the candidates? And I know that it can be very rare treasured things that you all get from seed exchanges from the North American Rock Garden Society members and all kinds of, you know, wish list plants, but for beginners, not that advanced stuff.
I would say if you're a beginner, there's a whole suite of what I call garden center alpines that you walk into the garden center and they're all in their little 4-inch pots, like Armeria maritima, and the creeping thymes and those types of things. If you want that instant mountain look, those are good starters. Semper vivums, like hens and chicks, are an excellent candidate for a beginner crevice gardener. But people often kind of, as they move through that journey, then they slowly want to grow more challenging, more difficult, and things that may not be easily available. There's a whole gamut of things. But for beginners, I would say Semper Vivum is probably the best plant for the crevice garden.
Yeah, I still love them.
Yeah.
They are amazing.
Yeah.
Little living sculptures, right?
Yeah. And they fit the bill so perfectly in that they're somewhat disposable and they're so easy to propagate that if you need a spot for them, you just plunk them in anywhere just to fill the space. And then if you need a place for a better plant, out they come, and then no love lost.
What about some of the hardy ice plants? They're sort of succulent-y, right?
Yeah. A lot of them that are commercially available can be fast-growing carpets, but there's some new hybrids now that stay a little more compact, and there's some species that stay smaller that'd be more appropriate for the crevice garden. Like Delasperma basuticum, I think is also called Delasperma congestum. Those guys love a crevice garden. They do great in there.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the little garden pinks. I love some of the little bun-shaped flowering things. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the little dianthus, the little campanulas, the little... Because it's so preposterous that, like, there's this thing in this pocket of rock, and then suddenly it sends up these flowers, you know?
Yeah.
There seems to be a rock garden or miniature version or species of most, you know, garden perennials. There's miniature verbascums, even, or miniature digitalis and miniature... But pinks, you nailed it though. Pinks and bluebells are classic and awesome.
So the dianthus and the campanulas, is that what they're called?
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, they're classics. There's so many species. And rock gardeners have been growing them for 100 years.
and you guys grow woody plants in these gardens too, don't you? I mean, that's what sort of blows my mind. It's like, how in the world did you get those to grow in there?
Well, I mean, small. For me personally, it's all about the dwarf shrubs. If I was to choose two that were really the ones that I like the best, it would be any selection of dwarf conifers, and Daphne is also one of my favorite genera as well. And they're all very well suited to the crevice garden, provided they're in scale with the garden. You don't want them to overgrow. But as long as they stay small, they're perfect. And the woodies are great because you do see those in nature in these extreme environments, often represented as a cremolz, which is a windswept kind of wind pruned tree way up on the mountain crest.
And what's that word?
Cremolz. It's a German word. It means crooked wood.
Those trees you see up at tree line that are blown sideways.
And yes.
All their leaves or needles are only on one side. They're kind of naturally bonsaied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
And a tree that in the valley bottom would be 150 feet tall is 2 feet tall up there, you know, and maybe the same age.
Wow.
You can bring that spirit of the mountains down to your garden, you know.
Yeah, that's the whole idea.
So like
one of them.
Dwarf Alberta spruces and
yes.
What else? What kinds of some examples?
Well, all the conifers, pines, spruces, cedars, cryptomerias, they all have dwarf versions.
Okay.
Often they're witches' brooms that have been discovered in nature, and then people can graft and take cuttings of those original dwarf witches' brooms, and they retain their character in
the
garden.
So just tell everybody what a witch's broom is.
It's a parasitic growth on a host tree, which basically creates a growth that's mutant, but often highly desirable because they're essentially dwarf versions and often bun forming or pendulous versions of the mother tree. But when you take a cutting or a graft off of those, they retain the character. And so then you've got yourself a dwarf conifer.
Okay.
Cool how wonderfully available those are in the States right now. I see them at a lot of garden centers, and maybe they were, you know, they were produced and ramped up for like the fairy gardening movement or the bonsai gardeners. So those are nicely available.
Yeah.
So I'm not getting out my big long handled shovel, and I'm not starting with a 5-gallon pot of some woody plant, or for that matter, even with the dianthus or the campanulas or the hens and chicks or whatever. I'm not starting with a quart pot, let alone a gallon. I mean, this is small. We're like going to tuck small things in with small tools and small plants. And how does that work?
Well, and it also reminds me to point out that the smallest crevice gardens can be in a pot themselves. So everything can be even tinier than tiny. But as you were pointing out, that all the work in a crevice garden and the maintenance is just kind of miniaturized. Instead of wheelbarrows of cuttings, you have a handful of cuttings. And rarely do we ever plant plants that are in a pot larger than a 2-inch pot.
Yeah. You know, and you know, when you think about these crevices, they're only 1 inch wide as a rule. So like you say, you can't put a 1-gallon pot in there. Well, I mean, you can if you bare root it and you kind of really modify the roots. But typically, everything's done in either 2-inch pots or even straight as seedlings that have been germinated in a separate pot, or as rooted cuttings. Those are all different ways. And certainly those last two ways are great, because you're talking about such a small root area that may only go down 4 or 5 inches, and basically doesn't really expand sideways at all. So planting seedlings and cuttings is a great way to get the garden going. Although you do have to baby them once they're in for a bit.
I was going to say, these are water wise, so to speak, low water usage gardens, because they're mimicking these places in nature where it's harsh and so forth. And the medium is fast draining, and so it's not absorbing and holding a lot of water. But in the beginning, what do I have to do? So I've got these practically bare rooted or bare rooted things, these young things. I've tucked them into these 1-inch gaps, these spaces of planting medium between these rocks. What do I have to do to get them acclimated? Do I have to water initially?
You sure do. All plants, no matter how tough they are tender when they're babies, you know, even if they're cactus or whatnot. So they do require a bit of babying up front, but we find they establish pretty quickly in a rock garden situation, especially if they're bare rooted and put in without their potting mix. They establish pretty nicely. And you can usually tell. I mean, my rule of thumb is if the plant got bigger, it's more established, you know?
Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of these rock garden plants, even when you grow them from seeds, 2 months after germination, you'll have a plant that's just 1/2 inch high, but then the root is 8 inches long already. Yeah. So the point is that they fire the roots down. And I believe the crevice encourages that deeper rooting and quick rooting, which basically makes them less prone to desiccation when conditions get tough.
Okay. You've worked on, you just mentioned, you know, it can be as small as a container garden, and obviously we wouldn't use the most fragile, delicate container. It'd probably be like a trough, or I love the idea of a galvanized tub, you know, like almost like a horse trough kind of a thing with rocks.
Some beautiful ones lately of horse troughs, or like painted copper and whatnot. They're just gorgeous. Further elevates this little mountain. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, and it brings it up, because if these little treasures, it brings it up closer to eye view, you know, so that we can really look at them. We don't have to crawl around to look at them. It's kind of fun.
Exactly.
And we've talked about rock. One of the gardens that you turned me on to, that I think you may have consulted on or did consult on, that used recycled concrete from an old foundation and I think an old parking space. In other words, they didn't bring in rock. It can be expensive. In some places, it's not widely available and so forth. Was at Plant Delights Nursery or their Juniper Level Botanic Garden in Raleigh, North Carolina. And they used all this recycled chunks of concrete. Yeah. And they made, I think, what is it, 300 feet long or something? This
can't even keep track. We're pretty sure that's the largest crevice garden on Earth now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, that wasn't really even the first big broken concrete installation. The Dutch should get credit for it. The University of Utrecht, because they don't have rocks in Holland, they built these broken sidewalk concrete spheres out of broken concrete, with these beautiful spheres with plants growing out of them. They did that, you know, a while ago. So that's a thing for sure. Just to illustrate your point that, you know, where rocks are not available or too expensive, broken concrete's everywhere there are humans. So it really, what I love about that is it levels the playing field. So even if you don't have a huge budget or you're not in a region where rocks are easy to get, broken concrete's great. And you can see it as an ecological thing too, since concrete is known to be such a big, a resource intensive material that we create.
Right, to upcycle it like this and utilize it.
Exactly. Some rock garden friends have jokingly called it Anthropocene limestone, because it functions the same way.
Yeah.
We also call it urbanite, but it can
urbanite,
it can,
right?
Yeah, it can look very natural. The broken ends of a piece of concrete can basically look like a rock when it's all put together properly.
Go both ways with it.
Yeah, you can fool people.
That's amazing.
So in these last like 3-4 minutes, I want to just talk a little bit about kind of, if people want to learn more and they want to get involved. I was really impressed that you started this community. I don't know how many years ago you started this Facebook community, and it's like there's a lot of people in that. And plus that, and also the resources of getting to know the North American Rock Garden Society, which has 30 something chapters around the country and great websites and all kinds of learning information. Tell us a little bit about, you know, if people want to become part of this community, either virtually or in person.
There are, like you point out, mountains of information and nice people out there for this, which is surprising for what seems like such a esoteric garden style. But you mentioned the Facebook page that Paul and I started called Modern Crevice Gardens. There's a rock garden club in most English-speaking countries, or all of them. And there might be, you know, local chapters, so it's worth hunting them down. You mentioned NARGS, North American Rock Garden Society, and there's one in England and Scotland, and there's a French and a German and Czech version too. So there's a lot of friendly people out there to teach you or just hook you up with the right books.
And I feel that it's actually important, if you really want to get into stuff, to join one of those clubs, mm-hmm. because this is not mainstream gardening. This is not the kind of thing where you walk into a garden center and you're going to see a crevice garden. Maybe one day you will. But a lot of the plants are just straight up not available. And so you really need to know people to be able to make those connections, because there's a lot of exchanging of plants, exchanging of seeds, all that type of thing. And if you're just an island unto yourself, out there and not connected with the community, you just may find it harder to kind of make the progress that you want to make in this world, you know?
And the learning is such an ongoing journey too. You know, it's nice to seek that mentorship. And I think that's why we love it so much, is that you're never done learning about it. There's always a new group of plants, you know?
Yeah. And of course, with the transcript, I'm going to give the links to all of these, you know, the Facebook group and the North American Rock Garden Society and its list of chapters and all those kinds of things. One of the, just a final thought, you know, and it kind of relates to the Plant Delights concrete upcycled crevice garden galore, is that it can be a retaining wall, which that sort of does serve as, instead of building a concrete or brick wall, you can make it permeable, so to speak, and plant in it and make it a live thing, right?
Yeah.
Which I love that.
I think that might be one of the freshest things about it, is looking at a crevice garden as habitat, because I think a lot of Americans are thinking of their gardens now as potential habitat for pollinators, birds, etc. And, some folks have known for a long time that crevice gardens attract the lizards and the butterflies to warm their wings and the spiders that eat their pests,
And the ground burrowing bees.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That's where they go in my garden for sure. They go to the crevice garden. Yep.
Well, Kent and Seth and Paul Spriggs, the authors of the new book, The Crevice Garden, How to Make the Perfect Home for Plants from Rocky Places, which we're going to have a giveaway of on the with transcript on awaytogarden.com. I'm really glad to talk to you. I'm so glad we did the piece for the Times, because I feel like this is something that people need to know about. And I think it has a role in a lot of different places, as you've been saying. So thank you. Thanks for making time today.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a treat.
Talk to you again soon.
Hope so.
Thanks, Margaret.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbooks, small gift books illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin, in bookstores now.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.